We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
January 6th, investigators hit a new snag as the top House Republican announces he won't cooperate. Plus, U.S. and European CEOs cite inflation as their biggest concern for the new year. And revelations of a lockdown-defying party more than a year and a half ago threaten U.K. Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
It was a grim time for the country, and I think what jars here is that the man who ostensibly was setting those rules didn't seem to abide by them.
It's Thursday, January 13th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy says he won't cooperate with the committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. McCarthy has previously said he would share information with the committee, but now says his private conversations with then-President Trump around the time of the riot were, quote, not remotely related to the violence that unfolded at the Capitol. McCarthy is the latest House Republican to rebuff requests from the January 6th committee, after Representatives Jim Jordan and Scott Perry earlier refused to testify or supply documents to investigators. The U.S. is imposing new sanctions on North Korea following Pyongyang's latest hypersonic missile test. The U.S. also intends to propose additional U.N. sanctions against North Korea over its recent ballistic missile tests, a move State Department spokesperson Ned Price said is intended to get Kim Jong-un back to the negotiating table.
It's important that the international community send a strong, unified message that the DPRK must halt provocations, it must abide by its obligations under UN Security Council resolutions, and engage in sustained and intensive negotiations. Now, obviously, we have not seen all of that.
That plan could face opposition from China and Russia, who as recently as November had urged the Security Council to undo a series of sanctions on North Korea. Disruptions caused by COVID-19 are still considered the biggest threat for CEOs globally. But a surge in inflation is increasingly worrying business chiefs. The latest survey of 900 CEOs conducted by the Conference Board found that U.S. and European bosses are now more concerned about rising prices and labor shortages. And nearly 60% of U.S. CEOs expect higher consumer prices to last until at least mid-2023. The Fed also seems to share that concern. Federal Reserve Governor Lael Brainard is today expected to tell Congress that reducing inflation is the central bank's most important task. UBS has long profited from wooing rich families with its wealth management business, but now the Swiss banking giant is targeting the not as rich with cheaper digital advice. It joins several other lenders in taking aim at a bigger profit pool by expanding its client base beyond the ultra wealthy. For more, we're joined by Margot Patrick, who covers European banking for the Journal. Hi, Margot.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Margot, first off, give me the details of this new strategy.
So UBS is looking to reach more customers. And so by going digital and opening up to people who aren't as rich as their typical customer, people who have maybe $250,000 or $1 million to invest, they can reach those people for a lot less money by offering them advice through their phones. And that's just a way for UBS to reach a lot more customers and potentially make a lot more profit.
How big of a shift is this from UBS's current wealth management approach?
So it's a shift in the sense that UBS's calling card is really as a private banker to billionaires and to rich families who control a lot of the world's wealth. But the reality is that there are very large pools of wealth among people that aren't as rich. They're younger. They have a younger profile. They may think of their parents going to sit down with a wealth advisor and talk about retirement planning, but they don't think that they're ready for that. But they have money to invest. They also maybe don't want to go on Robinhood or E-Trade and just open a stock trading account. So this is a shift for UBS in that it usually does meet people for the first time in person. That is usually its contact with a wealth client. And so this is a way to reach just a lot more people, just in a different channel.
And what is UBS hoping to gain from that?
So this is a way to really sort of take something UBS already has and open it up to a wider audience. And what they're hoping to gain is to make more money from it, because the profit margin on offering digital advice versus having someone sit down with a human being is just a lot less. So they can potentially make a lot more money by reaching people this way.
And Margo, it's not just UBS that's targeting a broader group of clients. We've got Fidelity and Charles Schwab making similar moves. What does this all tell us about the wealth management industry right now?
So I think it's these big brokerages and these big wealth managers and large banks are seeing that customers can get a lot of their advice just through a phone, through a computer. They don't go into a bank to deposit a check anymore, so they're not going to go sit down with someone to talk about their financial planning. And so we're going to see probably more of these mass market products or platforms to reach more people. And it's a really competitive market right now, and UBS has a lot to gain, but also has a lot to lose from its rivals getting bigger and bigger.
Margo Patrick covers European banking for the Journal. Thanks, Margo.
Thank you.
Coming up, Boris Johnson faces growing calls to resign after revelations he broke his own government's lockdown rules. We've got more on the desperate leadership battle he now finds himself in after the break.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is fighting for his political life. He's embroiled in a major scandal involving his attendance at a party in early 2020 when the UK was under strict lockdown. It's a stunning change of fortune for a prime minister who swept into power in late 2019 and handed Conservatives their largest majority in Parliament since Margaret Thatcher. Here to explain how a 25-minute appearance by Johnson more than a year and a half ago could trigger a massive shakeup in British politics is one of our UK correspondents, Max Colchester. Hey, Max.
Hey, good morning.
Max, first off, break down this scandal for us. What exactly do we know?
I mean, the main thing here is that in May 2020, Boris Johnson's principal private secretary sent out an email to Downing Street staffers saying, "The weather is nice. You've all been working very hard. Why don't we all congregate in the garden and bring some booze and have a few drinks?" And that email, you know, didn't surface up until earlier this week when a copy was published by another news organization. And that has kickstarted a massive firestorm, which, as you say, now imperils Boris Johnson's leadership potentially.
Yes. And on Wednesday, Johnson admitted he was sorry for attending the party. How did that apology go over?
I think we should put this into context. At the time in May, the rules stated that Brits were only allowed to meet outdoors and meet one other person outdoors. And that was a very strictly enforced rule. And what Boris said is that he's sorry that the party happened, but that in wandering into his garden and having a few drinks with his colleagues, he thought it was a work event as opposed to a social event. And that is his sort of get out of jail card, as it were. And the question now is whether that stands up to scrutiny or not.
Max, for an American audience that, at least at the start of the pandemic, had a president who hosted, quite notably, some mask-free events at the White House, why has this event struck such a nerve in Britain?
Well, the issue here, Luke, I think, is one of double standards. There's a feeling that the government set out a very clear set of rules that applied to everybody. And at the time, people were not allowed to go and see loved ones who were in hospital. They were not allowed to send their kids to school. People were dying alone in hospital. It was a grim time for the country, and a lot of people made a lot of sacrifices. And I think what jars here is that the man who ostensibly was setting those rules didn't seem to abide by them. And I think that's what's really struck a nerve here.
How has this whole scandal impacted Johnson's public support? I imagine his critics are seizing on this, but particularly for British voters who were inclined to support him, is their support starting to erode as well?
Yes, it is. I mean, Boris Johnson's Conservative Party, now having had for many, you know, since 2019, a very comfortable lead over the opposition Labour Party, is now dipped to, the latest poll yesterday showed, 10 points behind the Labour Party. Approval rating in the government has cratered to something like 23%, which is very, very low. And people are genuinely angry. But, you know, this is an immediate reaction to something that has really hit a nerve here. So the question is, you know, does the polling keep showing that downward trajectory for Johnson, or can he stabilize it and pull it back up? And you have to remember that Boris Johnson is a political Houdini. He is constantly getting into trouble, into scrapes, and getting into positions that other politicians would be felled by and then magically recovering. So it's always very dangerous to write him off.
Yeah, you mentioned Johnson being a little bit of a political Houdini. He may have his back up against the wall, but assuming he doesn't resign immediately, what could his road ahead in terms of a political survival look like?
What a lot of the lawmakers were saying last night was there's an internal investigation ongoing led by a civil servant in the UK. They're saying, let's wait and see what that investigation says, and then we will make up our minds as to whether the prime minister should resign. So the question is, what does this report say? And there's a high probability that this internal review is somewhat inconclusive, and that might give Boris Johnson more time, because at that point, maybe lawmakers don't feel they need to replace him. Equally, interestingly, overnight, there have been no resignations from Boris Johnson's cabinet. There were some real worries that there would be a mutiny, and that hasn't materialized. So I think as with every day that passes from now, the ship could stabilize. But there's no doubt that this has seriously dented the view amongst lawmakers that he's an election-winning machine, because they worry that his reputation will be so tarnished by this that come the next election, he won't be able to perform like he has in the past. But that, you know, politics is a fickle game, and we just don't know which way this is going to swing.
One of the reasons we perhaps haven't seen more members of the Conservative Party turn on the Prime Minister, that they haven't settled on who a suitable alternative might be.
Yes, I think that's a very good point. There are a couple of candidates who are seen as potential front runners, but you have to remember that the Conservative Party is famed for being ruthless about getting rid of underperforming leaders. But, you know, the last one who was jettisoned, Theresa May, you know, it took her effectively losing an election, really badly handling the UK's divorce from the EU, years of rolling rebellion before they finally got rid of her. So, you know, this is a process that can play out over a very, very long time. And I think that the worry, I would imagine, in Boris Johnson's camp right now is that this is the beginning of a sort of death by a thousand cuts process. And that over the next few months, there'll just be a drip, drip, drip of negative news, bad polling, maybe more scandals, maybe poor electoral performance at local elections, that kind of thing, which slowly makes his position untenable.
Max Colchester is a UK correspondent for the Journal. Max, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Luke. Cheers.
And finally, the race for space domination is heating up. Recent analysis of soil from the moon that was collected by a Chinese lunar probe is believed to contain an isotope called helium-3. It's a significant discovery because helium-3 has the potential to make nuclear energy safer since it isn't radioactive. And as our reporter Natasha Khan explains, the microscopic isotope is fueling a new space race with the United States.
Helium-3 is thought by scientists to have the potential to one day provide safer nuclear energy in a fusion reactor. It's rare on Earth, but thought to be abundant on the moon. And basically, coupled with research done in the space of nuclear fusion, scientists are hoping that in decades to come, there might be some breakthroughs that will mean that helium-3 could potentially be used to address Earth's energy needs, but also power moon bases for future missions.
And that's What's News for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.